Welcome to another session of the International Crimes Investigative Committee. Today we're going to be talking about a topic that has been on many people's minds, but many people have discarded it as being somewhat wacky. We will try and see what is really going on with these lipid nanoparticles. What is in the vials? How does the stuff that's in there, whatever is in there, interact with outside forces, maybe microwaves, maybe 5G, we don't know. But we're going to try and zero in and see if there is any truth to the rumors that we have heard, because what we're talking about is not just Corona. We're talking about the entire agenda of the Great Reset, which includes population control, and that includes population reduction and transhumanism. That in itself is wacky enough, I must say. We will try to not sensationalize anything, but we will not downplay anything either. We'll try and look at everything in the most rational manner possible. We have a great panel of experts with us. Dr. Mike Eden is, for the first time, our co-host in this. He will be able to ask the right questions. I'm just an attorney. I need experts to explain everything to me. Dr. Mike Eden is the former vice president of Pfizer, and I think, Mike, you've been their chief science officer for 16 years, if I'm not correct.
Yes, I was, for allergy and respiratory, rather than the whole company, yes. Mm-hmm.
Please go ahead, Mike, and introduce yourself, because your biography is so impressive that I don't have all the details.
Well, I don't know about that, but I will say to people that I'm doing my normal job in extraordinary setting. That's all. My job always has been to try and understand, you know, what's going on in health and disease. What can we possibly do to intervene in a way that would bring benefits of value to a patient without unacceptable side effects, because that's always a problem. It's 100 times easier to hurt people than it is to produce a benefit. So, in fact, you know, the default expectation when you mess with biology is that you break things. That's the truth. So, people may know, I was at Pfizer. I'm a PhD pharmacologist. I was a biochemist and toxicologist original training. 32 years in biopharmaceutical R&D, 10 years, the last 10 years of which I was in biotech. I both consulted to biotech, about 30 companies, and also ran my own biotech, and was very lucky to get acquired by Novartis in 2017. So I was comfortably retired when this crime began in front of me, and within a few weeks I transformed from a normie who listens to the national media and thinks it's pretty much correct. I'm just going to have to come back on the call in a moment. I'm just receiving an urgent call. Okay? I'll be right back.
This is, by the way, exactly what happened to me. I would consider myself to have been a normie, and then Corona struck, and all of a sudden, nothing seemed to make sense anymore. Well, we will start with Dr. David Nixon. Who is a scientist from, are you from Australia, or do you just live in Australia, David?
Good morning. Good afternoon. I'm living in Brisbane, Australia. I'm a family physician, so I'm a general practitioner, as we call them over here. So I've been spending the last 25 years managing family patients of all ages and all conditions. And in about June of this year, I bought myself a dark field microscope, and I started looking at patient blood and the vaccines under the microscope. So I'm keen to go through what I've been finding with respect to the Pfizer vaccine in particular.
And you kind of gained notoriety because of the findings you made through the dark field microscope when you appeared on the Maria Z show. And that is what we're going to start talking about in a minute. We also have Shimon Janowitz, who is you're an engineer from Israel. Am I correct when I say you're an electrical engineer?
Yes. Hello, Rainer. Yes, I'm from electrical engineering. You're correct.
And we also have Anna Mihalsa. And she, please go ahead, Anna. You have a very unusual background. You come from Romania. You grew up for a while, at least, in Germany, and then you went to the United States.
Yes, so I'm a board certified internal medicine physician in the United States. I have a PhD in pathology. I have my own anti-aging clinic. I've been active in the COVID resistance for over 2 years. And then I got involved with an international collaborative effort to investigate the C19 virus and have been collaborating with Shimon and David. Also explored the effect of vaccine shedding through markers like D-dimer, and I'm an advocate for new ways of screening vaccinated individuals to prevent sudden death by looking at all aspects of what could be in the virus and what could be affecting people, including this type of strange and weird technology that we have found.
Thank you. And we have Karen Kingston. She needs really no introduction, and we've spoken with her quite a few times already, but this is important because she has been, for a long time, she has been taking a deep dive into what is in the Pfizer vials. And once upon a time, if I'm not completely mistaken, Karen, you even worked for Pfizer, correct?
Yeah, I worked for Pfizer a long time ago. I was in sales, and then I moved to their agency side. They moved me into marketing. So I did work for their agency. I worked on some brands you've probably heard of, like Viagra and Lipitor and products like that. But I'm a strategist and an analyst. I've been in an agency for several years. Pfizer was a client of the agency. It's called Veritas, which means truth. I was very good at what I did. I was not either. I was hired because a lot of times companies would be in a foxhole because their marketing agency and sales team would go rogue. And so I would have to take them back to what they legally can say and what was submitted to the FDA. So, and my expertise is also to go through hundreds of pages of complex clinical data and simplify it so that physicians can understand it and then simplify it again so that consumers can understand it. I did not do this on my own. I had to do PhDs and MBAs. Doing this on my own now, but you know, hopefully we can get a unified team together to move forward to really get the truth out there.
That's exactly what it looks like right now. Well, let's start off with you, David. What is it, because your findings kind of made a splash within the resistance, if I may call it that, when you were on the Maria Z show. So what is it that you found?
Right, so this just quickly, just a little bit of background about how I got involved with this. This is a short video of how the Pfizer vaccine appears under a dark field microscope. At 100 times magnification, we see this sparkling background here, and then often we see these ignored structures which appear to amalgamate together, and these have been described as being cholesterol shards, but nothing to look at. But there's been concern about their nature certainly from a number of groups internationally. This is a photo stitched image of the Pfizer vaccine that have been left overnight. And as you can see around the tree, there are some strange crystal growth or some strange structures that appear to grow in the nature of a crystal. Some of them are really quite complex in appearance, and certainly showed these images quite widely. Some of the images do not look like naturally occurring crystals. They have internal structures that appear to be different from what one expects from a naturally occurring crystal, and there's often association debris appearing beside them. One thing I do early on was I put that slide inside a Faraday bag, and I discovered that when I did that, the crystal into the structure wouldn't grow. All I got was these black dots. But when I didn't shield the slide, I thought these structures would appear the next morning. So what happened next was that I revisited one of the slides that I'd done previously 10 weeks before and discovered that the crystal-like structures had actually changed in their appearance, and they were present not only on the periphery but all through the sample. When I did a close-up of these structures, they were fundamentally different from the original ones. They had, you know, the appearance of a much more concerning nature. I've got a few examples of these. And these structures were often associated with these ribbons that were present as well. I've just got a few examples of these structures and the nature of their design. And as I said, they're often associated with these ribbons. And some of them are really quite concerning the appearance. And they're often associated with these ribbon-like structures, which weren't present in themselves 10 weeks previously. Uh-huh. And we can also see that these spinal structures in the background appear to be smaller version of the larger one. So if I zoom in on this smaller one, it'll have a similar appearance to the larger structure. And then what I discovered overnight, all of these structures disappeared. That is all of them except for a couple, and I focused on the ones that remained. And this is a photo of the night of the morning after all the structures had disappeared. Following about 6 hours later, this was all that was left of that crystal, was the central structure. And then over time, all these structures that were visible in this field, this is 40 times magnification, just slowly disappeared. And at normal speed, it's very difficult to detect anything happening. But when I speed up the video, this is an hour recording, it's possible to see the structure slowly disappearing. So this is another clip of that process. This is the central crystal that I showed in the previous photo. This is now 200 times magnification. And at normal speed, there's the appearance that nothing's happening, but when the video is sped up, it's possible to see that there is an actual effect, quite a lot happening in the background and to the square itself. So I'd just like to share a second video I've got of this process, which I need to share as a separate file. So I'll just sort that one and start this one. So this is a similar example of this process, which I'm calling micro deconstruction. And at normal speed, nothing is appearing to happen. And this the heat is almost an hour, in real time, nothing seems to be hidden. But again, if I speed it up, we can see that there's quite a process going on. This structure on the left ear disappears first, and then the central crystal just disappears. And this material around the central square, which was inactive to start with, certainly seems to be involved in this process. So I've got quite a few examples of this deconstruction process happening, but it was the video of the construction process itself that was the one that I discussed with Maria. And we'll just forward to that now.
David, this is Mike. I'm looking with interest, and I may ask questions. I'd like you to, receive it as an enthusiastic skeptic. That's the way I've always been about science, always enthusiastic, but I always think I'm not sure about things. So when I ask, that's the approach. It's not that I'm concerned, but so when I look at the film where you showed the disappearance of the large square, what occurred to me, and I've had very little exposure to microscopes, just enough to be dangerous, okay? So what it seemed to me to be possible was that the object was moving out of the focal plane over time, because I remember playing badly with say, smears of cells from an airway. I would sometimes realize if I pressed on the stage that the slide is mounted on, or just moved the focus slightly, sometimes an object can appear and disappear exactly as you described, as you showed it. And I'm thinking, what steps did you take to convince yourself, as well as other people, that you remained focused on the same plane all the way out, all the way through, so as to be able to reject that possibility? But I think you know what I'm saying, that what I've said is true, that
yes,
objects appear, disappear and appear if you change the focal plane by a few microns.
Yeah, I quite agree. But the video was shot in over an hour, so I didn't, an hour, yeah, and spent in, so it didn't appear and disappear, you know, in the, by touching the slide.
No.
Because it happened so slowly. This is the next video, and this has been sped up about 400 times. And in real time, you don't see anything happening at all.
So this is a plant which is has a little bit of physical chemistry. Is my first reaction would be this evaporation of some solvent, which over time is leading to really small changes, but those changes are large enough to register as movement. It's possible that it's
just from the perspective of what is this structure doing in a vaccine vial?
Oh, yeah. It shouldn't be in there. There's people say, well, let me just take a couple of steps back. These vaccines should not exist at all. It's literally impossible. If the narrative of a new virus had been true, which I don't believe, but if the narrative of a new virus had been true, I can promise you that generating an intramuscular vaccine was an inappropriate strategy that could never have worked. And regulators and the drug companies have the data to prove it. And in brief, we know 10 years of intramuscular flu vaccines did not reduce incidence of hospitalization or deaths from influenza-like illnesses. So we already know that the elderly, vulnerable people do not benefit from vaccines, almost certainly because their immune systems are senescent.
So we are watching this very interesting thing, and I understand that you have your opinions, but maybe we can allow the presentation of David just to...
We're going to get to your side by saying that vaccines are an irrational strategy, so they shouldn't even exist. The fact that they exist is flawed. The fact that they exist and have been jabbed into billions of people is a deliberate point. Okay, so I'm with you a long way. I just don't know what I'm saying. That's it.
Yeah, I think it's important to ask the right questions, and I think that was a good question to ask. Okay, let's go ahead.
Okay, so I've just got the same reaction base in focusing on the different areas. I think that's the end of this. This is the same structure as later. And these are the structures that were moving earlier. And what this video is just showing is the increase in complexity in terms of the light. But also, over time, I've captured changes in the appearance of the lights that come on in the structure. That would mean to us. Yeah, so down the bottom, this light appears in this structure mode.
Do you have any idea what this might be?
No. I mean, it appears to have intelligent design, and it seems to be acting in a way that would suggest that it's electronic, but that's a new guess, obviously.
Remember something else from your presentation on the Maria Z show, and that is that you said that this movement stops when you put the slide into a Faraday cage?
Yeah, so that was the part of the presentation that I quickly showed at the beginning. When I put the slide inside this bag which shielded it from the wireless router, mm-hmm. I didn't produce the structures. When the slide was on my microscope, these structures would predictably appear the next day. So the shielding produced the effect of stopping the structures from appearing.
Which seems to indicate that it's not self-assembling, but some outside force may be having an influence on whatever kind of assembling is occurring here.
Rainer, I would say that this is still, it still counts as self-assembly, only the self-assembly process requires some energy source. So this could be either thermal energy, you know, maybe just the injection into the body where the body temperature is elevated with respect to the ambient temperature. And there could also be contribution from an electromagnetic radiation source that could also flare up the dynamics of this process.
The definition of the Tesla-Ferris process is self-assembling, but it is initiated by an outside signal.
Mm-hmm. So David, again, forgive me, just for rigor, when you put the slide in the bag, did you remove the slide from the microscope so you could close the bag, or is the bag still open? That's one question. And the other one is, when you put it in the bag, you change more than just exposure to EMF. You you may exclude or reduce light, you may exclude or change temperature or air currents. And so I'm pointing out that although you may attribute the change to blocking EMF, you would need to do more experiments to be sure that that's what it was.
Yes. I did run the experiment overnight, so there was no light on where this slide. The slide was in a slide case, so obviously there was less oxygen available. And the humidity would have been different, and the temperature would have been different. But I couldn't control those things. I did run another trial where I put a slide on the router in one box in the bag. In a particular night, the router malfunctioned and was turned off all night, and I didn't put anything on any of the three slides. That was interesting. It's a very much a non-scientific experiment.
You're in a position where you're in scientific discovery. So you've made observations, and they could be exactly as Shimon mentioned. It could be it's responding to an external power supply, but maybe not. And so it would be incumbent, I was trying great things. I would think, okay, if I'm right, then if I do A, B, and C, then this will go away, and if I'm wrong, it won't. And so we have to be our own best critics if we want neutral people, and especially skeptical people, to take anything seriously.
So one of the reasons I tried this was after seeing Matt Taylor, an electrical engineer who's in Ecuador, demonstrate a similar finding with respect to wireless function. You've spoken to Matt recently, Anna. Do you want to talk to that?
Yes, absolutely. So he has found a very similar finding that basically showed that that he was documenting self-assembly, and he also did a time-lapse video of that. And so this was clearly showing some form of circuitry. And Matt is an electrical engineer, and he clearly said, it's like, look, you cannot say that this is a cholesterol crystal, salt crystal. This is what a lot of the critics are saying. And I just want to mention that, first of all, for example, in the United States, it is a criminal offense to look at the Pfizer vial. So every single person who has done this research has done it undercover and under extreme danger for themselves. And so the people who are asking for rigorousness, which would be university setting type of scientific elaboration, we cannot provide this. We are people who are endeavoring to help humanity by bringing this information forward. And it should be the pharmaceutical company, the FDA, and the CDC who disprove us and really show that they are doing the studies to say, what is this? Because we, in the case that that we are in, are not able or don't even have the means to be able to do this with a scientific rigor that would be acceptable to the scientists who are denying this possibility.
No, I take your point entirely. I agree that there are clearly materials in these vials that should not be there. There's no question. These are, I would say, without question. I've worked quite a bit with Hedley Reese and Sasha Lassipova, and together their experience and reading documents and anything else and knowledge of gene process says it's not possible that the industry has manufactured what it claims to have manufactured. So I'm not that surprised when you look into some samples and find it's not as described. Basically, I've gone very far for someone who was a normie in the industry. But the whole thing is a crime. As I say, these materials are an inappropriate intervention in human beings, even if the story of a new virus was true, which I don't think is true. So I'm with you. I'm more than suspicious. I'm certain these materials have malign intent. What I don't know is whether this is evidence. See, I wonder, this could be evidence of reckless initial manufacturing. People says I'm not qualified to make policies or create anything. That's one possibility. The other possibility is there is some, you know, deep state CIA technology in here. It could be either. Honestly, it could be either. I don't need evidence. I've already got evidence of severe crimes. So if I'm going to be persuaded that it's an additional crime, I would have a high standard because I'm already over the line on the principle.
Can I address this?
Sorry, I want to say something about the work of Matt Taylor that Anna is showing now. So let me just give credit to our colleague, Matt Taylor. He's also an electrical engineer, and I'm also a scientist from electrical engineering background, but also relative background in microscopy and microelectronic fabrication. So when you look at this thing from the point of view of an electrical engineer, you have nothing but to assume that this is an electronic circuit that is self-assembling right before your eyes. And as David shows, it's not so quick. It could take a day or two or three or a month, depending on how much energy is supplied to this. So let me just say that David and Matt Taylor's work in collaboration with each other. And Ryan, with regarding your previous, Mike, regarding your previous question of things going in and out of focus, I will want to maybe help David by saying that David has used an extremely low magnification in this microscopy. So that means that the depth of field is rather large. It was nothing like something like a 100 times objective. It was 20 times objective, which is not a very high magnification.
Agreed.
And the depth of field is rather high. And we have the same exact phenomena found by Matt Taylor, not using dark field, he was using bright field. It looks much more impressive on David's very advanced microscope. And I also want to say that on my side, I found, in addition to what seems like electronics, I found other structures self-assembling. I will be able to show them later. So this is not just the materials and the excipients that are in those vials. It's this amazingly advanced technology that seems to make new things out of these materials and excipients. And as David has shown, not only can it grow structures, it seems to be able to eliminate them thereafter, thereby maybe getting rid of some evidence. This is, I'm not making up these things. You can see for yourself.
I was wondering, David, have there been any reactions from the mainstream? Have there been any statements saying, for example, oh, you're imagining things, these are just crystalline structures dissolving or something like that, or nothing?
Nothing. Good.
That's not true. So Ryan Cole said that all we were seeing was cholesterol, salt, and sucrose crystals. And that we're not saying it's nanotechnology, it's microscopic scale, but a lot of people are saying that this is just normal. But, you know, cholesterol crystals do not look that elaborate, neither does salt or sucrose. I discussed this with Sasha Latipova, and we showed multiple, you know, comparison structures. So I think that if you look at some very, very advanced images, even from Life of the Blood in New Zealand, I mean, this looks like microcircuitry, and any engineer that we showed this to said, this is a circuit.
What
What is her take? What is Sasha's take on this?
Sasha is extremely concerned about all of the metals that are in there. She's concerned about all of these structures, the ribbons. She's saying, what is this? She's published on Trial Site News about David's finding. She is actually leading our effort at the International Research Collaboration. She's extremely concerned about this and wants answers, as do we.
I mean, Reuters last year when I said that these contain devices with graphene inside and the Associated Press after we went to Peters in July last year. So you can find those on my Substack. But I talked to attorneys last year when the data showed up in VAERS. So it's first finding, there's a couple approaches to discover what's in these vials. He said under any other circumstance, even if it was a vaccine, if you had that VAERS data, what you would do, and this is why people started looking at the lots, what you would do is what Johnson & Johnson did when they did a recall. You would take a look at the deaths, you would look at the lot numbers, and then you would recall those lots, and you would inspect them with an independent lab because you wouldn't be able to explain why there's so many deaths. So that's when people started saying, look at your lot. They didn't do the next logical legal step, which is then to recall those lots because they cause severe disease, injury, and death. And then an independent lab under a court of law to then look at those lots. So the lots that are causing the deaths in VAERS in and of themselves should be recalled and looked at. And now that the FDA approval has happened, later I'll share my screen. If you take a look at what they approved as far as the ingredients, the manufacturing processes, and the toxicity, 80% of it's redacted. Under the FDA law, since it was approved, we have the right under FOIA to know what those ingredients are. These are not biologics, though. We're not going to get it from CBER. We're going to get it from CDRH. How do we know that? Because pegylated lipids are classified as devices under CDRH. There's a logical explanation, Reiner, but for some reason, the logic and evidence I present is called not credible and ignored. And I'm very... I do med legal review processes for companies. I set them up for large Fortune 500 companies before they were Fortune 500 companies. So there's processes, there's logic, and I appreciate all this information. I've always been supportive of researchers and the scientists, but I'm looking for a methodology that would meet the critical needs of everyone in this movement, including Dr. Yeadon is talking about, and as far as them saying this could have been a flop, happy hazard, no, it's not, because the ingredients are redacted. So any expert who's saying they're 100% confident there's no nanotechnology or devices or graphene oxide in here, how do they know when 80% of the ingredients are redacted? That's the first thing. Second of all, there's over 60 manufacturers, including GlaxoSmithKline, Pfizer, I'm trying to think of. There's 60 global manufacturers of these lipid nanoparticles. Did you guys know that? I mean, it's published. There's a $12,000 report you can buy. It's on my Substack. So this is not a mistake when there's over 60 manufacturers globally, many of which are household names that are manufacturing. The Sanofi is one of the manufacturers of the lipid nanoparticles. Why is it?
Mike wanted to interject.
It is possible because the vaccines definitely have no purpose as vaccines. Okay? Immunologically, you can't rescue elderly, frail people with vaccines. Right? So the whole lot should be withdrawn and flushed. Now, it is a fraud in itself that they even exist, and they're lying to the public and the doctors and the FDA and you every day when they tell you, come and get the picture. They work. The evidence, I'm not guessing from principle, I'm showing on decades of use of intramuscular vaccines against influenza like illnesses. They don't work. So the whole thing is a fraud. So don't get me wrong, I'm definitely on the side of this is a crime. The question I think is only what is the crime?
Yeah.
So my initial position was they are expressing this biologically poisonous material called spike protein. I'm not sure that's an adequate explanation. You talked about the variation between lots. That seems to be a possibility, but that has not been explored. So I don't know whether the variation has got anything to do with the amount of protein expression. It could easily be to do with deliberate, malfeasance. Maybe something has been added to it. So the whole thing, we don't need to just withdraw some blocks and have a look and see if they've been made right or not, or something been added. They should all be withdrawn and thrown away. So companies around the world are planning and lobbying and providing a narrative to inject materials of provenance into the entire global population. So that's pretty wacky, what I've just said, but that's what I believe. I could stand up in front of the court and say so and justify it. So it's just a question of what are they doing? What are they doing? Started by recalling the lots that caused the deaths in Varus. Absolutely. People believe that still could happen.
I'm just saying that there's methodologies. I understand that, like, there's processes to get legally and intellectually and socially to get to a point. Just trying to express that process too, as well as as well.
Because they've broken all the laws. I think, honestly, 3 years ago, I would have called myself crazy for saying what I'm about to say, but it seems to me every institution and structure that would normally serve to protect the public has been suborned, and they're not going to respond to anything you do. That's my concern. Now, obviously, everybody should try their efforts, but as a scientist, I'm looking at what's happened, I would not anticipate we will get success, because everything is broken. That's what I'm just saying.
Can I get Mike? So let me just tell the audience that I've known Rainer and Mike for, I think, at least 2 years now.
We've
met on the meetings of Children's Health Defense. Two years ago, before these injectables, I call these injectables, like, I refuse to call them vaccines. Before they were ready, I gave their presentation on nanotechnology that I anticipated then would be in the later introduced injectables.
Yes, I remember.
And it was very hard at the time to convince people, even myself, and certainly Mike and Rainer, that I wasn't, confusing science and science fiction.
Yes.
Fast forward 2 years later, Mike, and I have yet to see one demonstration of any spike protein pulled out from the blood, single person. They don't have anything like that to show. Further than that, I have yet to see one electromicrograph image of the lipid nanoparticle.
I can show you the whole thing. It could be just a narrative. The whole thing could be a lie.
Exactly.
I've said to people, how many times is the right number for public health officials to lie to you in a way that costs you your life? It's a rhetorical question. The answer is zero.
But unfortunately, it is very real. Let me show you a couple of more. This is a larger magnification, so you can see that this is not very smooth. It has innate structural features in it. This is a particularly scary one, because to me it looks like an artificial organism that has spouts, and you can see the spouts of the nozzles here and here and here and here. It's as if it was designed to discharge, and maybe very slowly so. I'm speculating a little bit here. The contents that flows inside of it. And again, you can see that it's self-assembled and it left a blank margin where it took, I think it took the ingredients for its self-assembly from. And this is the blank region around it. Again, this is a tube. It has a mouth, an opening. I can show you other tubes. This is plastic. This is what we call a ribbon. And again, when we inspect this with electron microscope that is equipped with EDS, a spectrometer, we see mostly carbon and oxygen. So it could be graphene oxide, it could be graphite. You can call it carbon. I don't care. So, and the interesting thing about this is such structure exactly what we see in people's blood. Staring at me, and I said, "What's wrong?" And wordlessly, soundlessly, she said, "I could see her face. I'm scared." I think she said, "I'm scared," wordlessly, soundlessly. And then we broke the spell, and she said, "If the truth's anything like what you're telling me, it's so frightening. I don't want to know anymore."
Yeah.
I think that I've got that from lots of people. So I think even if we could defend a little bit further than what I suggest, I just don't think it would be productive. People will flee like, oil and water.
The strategy I'm talking about is not scary. I mean, it's disturbing, but it's not scary. It's just that pegylated lipids are devices. They've been classified.
Help me understand why that isn't just, they've looked at, some of the components of devices, but altogether we're going to call it a vaccine and take it down this other hall. You may be right, they did the wrong thing, but in the end, so what?
People don't know they're infected with devices. I'm saying it's a very clean recall and injury. You weren't told you were injected with a device.
Okay. I just want to know why it matters.
Well, because it's not terrifying, and it's something that wasn't disclosed to people, and it's absolutely not a vaccine because devices are CVRH. As CVR is vaccine, so it's just a very clear.
Yeah, it's a complete mess. So I understand.
It's a very clean. I have other stuff I'd like to share with the researchers, like the studies to validate what you're seeing under the microscope. And I'm happy to email them afterwards. I'm saying this strategy is a very clean, everyone knows pegylated 2000s in the Pfizer vaccine. That's a device. It can show it to you so we don't have to.
Is it necessarily true that a complex book containing, I don't know how many, it doesn't mean. If one of them is a device, is the product automatically a device?
No. So I worked on Therakos photopheresis, which uses electrophoresis and methoxysorolin, and the device is classified and filed separate from the methoxysorolin.
Yeah. So it's already that's. I understand what you're saying.
The device has to be filed separately from from the ingredient. I know this from my personal professional experience. Yeah.
Sure. No. Absolutely believe you. Yeah. That's fine. It's just what I imagine they'll probably do is to say, there are 10 components, one of which in isolation does classify as a device, but we judge the overall product to be whatever. And, then it becomes a legal matter. It's not even very powerful if I tried to explain it to someone who was not technical or had no regulatory experience. They would look at me and say, well, as long as it's been assessed correctly, Mike, I don't really mind. That's what they would say. So,
Well, the pegylated lipid would be one of a couple other things that are not classified as CVR. And then you would know the rest of the redacted ingredients.
Yeah. It's a good one. And have you used yourself the resources to pursue some FOIAs?
An attorney that's going to partner with me on
sure. Bill Marshall of Judicial Watch. Tom, I don't know. I've spoken a lot to Bill. And Bill also knows Sasha. So he's keen as mustard. And I think if we had a simple strategy that was simple enough that we can explain it to people, and that's what it would need to be.
I'm showing you right now,
slides,
if they can
show on screen. Okay. Yeah, I absolutely believe what you've just said. It's going to be the question of, well, what are we going to be able to do about that, given the corrupt institutions?
Can you guys see can you see my screen?
Yeah,
a little small,
but
this is the FDA approval for Comirnaty. There's the lipids there. You can see right here, there's polyethylene glycol. You see it? This is also in the BLA, the polyethylene glycol 2000. If you go to the database for devices for the FDA. You can see, sorry, I can't see the screen right now. You can see that these are for devices. Polyethylene glycol is listed as a device. This one is called an alpha hang peg. Again, it's a device. As you can see here, the pre-market approval is not released under section 814.9 CFR, the FDA medical devices. If a product is used in experimentation and has not been FDA approved yet, it does not need to be disclosed to the public until the FDA approval is granted. So this is protected under intellectual property. So here's another one, another PEG 2000. This one, I believe, is the American Red Cross. As you go through here, you can see also it's not pre-market approval. So they're not telling you all the ingredients, what it's being used for, because it's currently under experimental use and protected. But if you actually go to the website for the Red Cross and go to their CAS filings, you can find that it's listed there. It's harmful. This 29 CFR 1910 is an OSHA warning, meaning that you're not supposed to have skin contact with polyethylene glycol 2000, and that's categorized. So clearly this should not have been put in there. It is.
No. And I guess those things, those components, because they are not GRS, they would have to be toxicology, which they have not been. So straight away, that's eight levels of concern. Also, as you know, we know that some kegs, depending on nitrosized or commonly associated with allergy, allergic responses. And
the point is that it's a device. And as I go through the ingredients and I go through the databases with the FDA, these are categorized as devices or toxins not for human use. So saying it's in the ingredients listed in Pfizer, it's a device. It's not, I mean, they're calling lipids are devices and toxins. They just, because they called it a lipid doesn't, I mean, does anyone understand? I mean, I feel like.
Yeah, it seems clear to me just because they call it a vaccine, it's not a vaccine.
It's a device.
Yeah.
There's other stuff I can validate too, but this is just a very simple, it's not only is it like, okay, well, it's not only is it not a vaccine, the regulatory body that oversaw all this never had the authority to do so. It's a completely different regulatory body under the FDA.
Yeah, this is definitely in and of itself extremely scary. And as Mike said, we can go beyond this, but we need help with that. Our task should be to get this information out and to get it and to spread it to as many people as possible, because there are others out there who will be able to step in and help. And there will be attorneys who will help you on that FOIA stuff too. This gets scarier by the minute, so to speak. And if you just look at the device or at the structures that Shimon just showed us, and what I've seen these very same or almost the same structures in the blood of people that have been examined by doctors who I know and who I trust. If you look at this, it looks like technical devices. It doesn't, and it could even be, but this is again moving into speculative territory. It could be electronic devices, but definitely I agree. These are devices, even by the look of it. They're devices, yes, but what do they do?
And Reiner, I would like to share just from a clinical physician standpoint of what I'm seeing and what I can show you in live blood analysis in terms of what Shimon has done. Would it be okay to do that? Or Karen, do you have other stuff to share? Because I really want to hear what you have to say.
I have additional information to support what Shimon just showed, and I'll email you those documents. I've not had a chance to go through and review them, so I don't want to speak about something that I haven't had a chance to thoroughly review.
When you email this to us, we're going to put it up on our website. But when you email this to us, can you try and decide what you think this means? Because if we're left to our own devices,
I'm going to email Shimon that.
Okay, good.
I can show you what I'm gonna send a publication that, and he can go through it. That's entitled stimuli responsive nanoparticles, nanogel capsules for integrated. Okay. Let me just share my screen real quick so you can see it. I think, and then I'll, this is what I was going to send.
This would be a good opportunity to thank you, Rainer, to bringing us all with Karen and Mike Eden under this show of yours, and we can get to network with each other. And it's nice to make your acquaintance, Karen. I really appreciate your work. Thank you.
Thank you, Siobhan. This is what this is all about. We need to connect with the people who we can work with, because this is what I keep saying. And when you alluded to the fact that maybe some people have lost their minds, this is my terminology, of course, I'll remind you of what Professor Susharit Bhakti and his wife found out, how this seems to be affecting the minds of the people. And when you use the word lobotomy, that is exactly what Dr. Peter Bregan said. It reminded him, he's the one who abolished lobotomy, which is one of the worst crimes against humanity ever committed. Most people don't know what this is, but if you have seen the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, then you do know what I mean. So Peter Bregan says it is as though someone, it doesn't work the same way with everyone, but in some people, it looks to him as though they were lobotomized. Some, and Susharit says it breaks the will of some people. And that's why I think we shouldn't be concerned about people who don't want to talk to us or can't talk to us. We should focus on our own group, on the group of people who are willing to find out what's going on, one, and who are willing to do something about it. All the others, they can join us if they feel like it, or if they are beginning to ask questions, but we shouldn't focus on them. We should focus on our own group of experts, because they're the ones, we are the only ones. We're the cavalry, basically.
Yep. So just to validate what Shimon was showing, and what all the scientists have said, this is what you're looking at. It's not one technology, you know, talk about nanoparticles, nanogels, capsules. Also, the pegylated lipids are hybrid with some of them are proteins that are hybrid with that study as well. But this one talks about, this is just a general, what you're seeing is hybrid nanostructured particles from nanometers to a few micrometers, microgels, pore shells, this pore shell structures. And then I have a book chapter on genetically engineered magnetic hydrogels that talks about how they take nanotechnology to build out micro and micro-sized structures. So this is probably what, Shimon, you're looking at, is this technology. That's what it is. So it is intelligent, so it is self-assembling, but it also responds to frequencies and signals. It responds to its environment.
Yeah,
so I can share this information with you.
It has, excellent. It has this nested structure, and I can definitely see this in the slide that I was showing. Thank you.
Yeah, and then an important point that I didn't share before, I wanted to share real quick about the pegylated lipid is what it is used for. Yeah, here it is. So this, we were told that this doesn't do gene editing, so. This is the Broadform is a supplier to Thermo Fisher and other companies. And it says here the PEG 2000. Okay, so this is the PEG 2000. So this has already been disclosed to us. This is my point, is that I have what's already been disclosed and filed with the FDA. The PEG 2000 is used for liposome preparation, right? And again, we're told this wasn't doing gene editing. It's for small interfering RNA. It's for silencing genes inside of our body. It says it right there. And it's delivered in the COVID-19 vaccine. So siRNA is used for gene editing, but it's for. And this has typically been used in anti-cancer drug delivery systems, da 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 da. So this is
not. I absolutely get it. Quick question. Can you think if the product contains, say, 50%, whatever it is, DMG PEG, it's a device, I think we're going to say. What happens if it's like 1%? Is there a point at which?
I believe it does. It's more than that. But Mike, I have other products that are disclosed that are also toxins and are supposed to be used for in vitro gene editing. So this is not, I'm only showing you, I've done thousands of hours of research. That's probably equivalent to tens of thousands. And I need to be treated as a partner, though not as an assistant, which is kind of what's been happening. You know, I need a strategic team that's willing to partner with me to get this information out and not say, can you find out about the luciferase? Can you find out about this? That's kind of how.
Absolutely. My first question is, it seems to me it doesn't match. Well, it does, but it kind of doesn't. If I'm a person in the street, even a physician, say, who's using the vaccines, they probably don't really care if it's been approved by federal A, B, or C. And now I know you do.
It matters from a legal perspective. One is because if you're going to argue in a court of law that this can be on the vaccine schedule for children, no, it cannot. It's a device. It's a device.
Yeah, so are we saying devices can't do vaccines? I'm just acting.
No, they can't do vaccines. Vaccines are biologics.
This is a new vaccine. This is new. So, I just don't know. You're absolutely right, but I just don't know basically, if the person hearing the case was corrupt, they would ease this bit of bang out of court by saying, well, if this is both a device and a vaccine, we decide to classify as a vaccine. You've got to go somewhere.
Yeah, but I think that, I'm hoping if enough people haven't had the lobotomy yet, that they'd be offended that they were injected with a device.
That's the point. We have to get this out. We have to get this information out. If people see these pictures, I've seen them before, and I thought, well, why isn't there an outcry? Because I was assuming that everyone, including the mainstream media, had access to them, but it's not true. It's only us who have access to these pictures. Mm-hmm. I think these pictures are, in and of themselves, so concerning that anyone who hasn't been lobotomized yet, who has half a brain or a pulse, and who has gotten the injections, must get extremely concerned about this.
Yeah, there is no, I often use this phrase, there's no benign interpretation that can be placed upon the observations. It's serious. So you don't need to be a lawyer or philosopher. It's just, there's no benign interpretation of what they've done and continuing to do in numerous dimensions, and that this is important.
Your point, Karen, is, if I get you correctly, if it's a device, it cannot be a vaccine. If it's a device, whatever authority has allowed this product to go on the market was probably the wrong authority, because there's another authority out there which is in charge of devices. Yeah. Is this correct?
Yeah, and then the first step, too, is like, if we just jump to, you were injected with self-assembling lipid nanotechnology that's building out, viruses and new creatures inside your body. Whoa, that's a lot. But if we can start with, this is a device, and people can acknowledge it's a device, and then we can show, and here's what the device looks like inside your body.
You know, I keep saying that it's not the courts of law that will turn the tide here. They're going to clean things up with our help. We're going to need the courts of law, or our own version of the courts of law, if we can't trust the ones within the system, to clean things up and to take these global corporations that are responsible, to take them down. But it is the people who we need to convince. That's why it's so important to get this information out. And but Mike is correct, because if you are going to take this case into a court of law and you're inside the system and you have someone who is corrupted to a degree or under pressure, then this is probably going to be their line of defense. They're going to say, yeah, well, maybe it is a device, or maybe part of it is a device, but this is a novel product.
Yeah, but I'm saying that at least you get the acknowledgement that it's a device.
Yeah, I understand.
And then
yeah.
You can go and say, this is what the device does inside your body. Now, I only showed you one of the devices that's in there. 80% of the devices are redacted. I have other FDA filings on QDOT that currently are not public available. Is QDOT in this technology? No one can say whether or not it is, because the other devices are redacted. But we know this one device is in there, and then we're observing these additional devices. I'm trying to kind of come up with a logical, factual people can digest, right?
Yeah, and we need something that people can understand, because we need to talk to the people. First to the people, and then to the courts of law.
First to the people, and the courts of law, but let's first say this is the device, this is one device that we know of. And there's here these images of all these other devices. We can go to the BLA, look, they've all been redacted. We don't know what these are. We have we have some evidence, and we have strong hypotheses on them, you know? But we need that information from the FDA, from CDRH, or, you know, whoever's we need. Manufacturers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that make sense what I'm trying to do a, like.
You're trying to put together a strategy, yes.
I'm trying to put together a strategy, yes. Yeah. Anyone have comments?
But the strategy is multi-level, and I think that Karen's strategy is extremely important, and, you know, the researchers are extremely important. I think that what I've always loved about when Karen Kingston speaks out is that she puts it in the broader context of what we're fighting for is the human species, and getting back to the point that 5.3 billion people have been injected. We don't know how this technology, for example, is related to the phenomenon of died suddenly. Are the long clots that are 6 feet long, is that part of self-assembly nanogel or carbon tubes or anything like that? And the next thing is that the phenomenon of shedding that is still being denied, even by frontline doctors, is for real. Mm-hmm. And I would like the opportunity just to show a couple slides just to really show that this is an issue, because if we do not acknowledge that this is a societal problem, and that we literally have people with long COVID who are uninjected, who have ongoing problems, and the regular doctors are saying, oh, this is because the spike protein is circulating, et cetera, but we're finding the same structures in the unvaccinated blood. And it's correlated with blood markers, for example, the D-dimer, which shows microclotting on a massive scale in unvaccinated people, women who have hemorrhaging, you know, we have people with headaches and blood pressure abnormalities, all of these things. And if you would just allow me, I just want to show a couple of slides just to show you what I'm speaking of. And just 1 second here. So I got the same microscope as David, and, you know, I've been working with him via Zoom on his studies, but I really work on finding out what is the impact on the unvaccinated and the shedding phenomenon. And we don't know whether or not these structures are also environmentally coming to us. For example, through chemtrails, through the food supply. You know, clearly we have these 26 teams worldwide who have found these abnormal findings. The RNA sequences we discussed, that there's fragments, some vials have no impurities. If you just look at RNA, that in itself is a huge problem. Then we discuss these huge amount of minerals. Cesium is radioactive. So do people have radiation poisoning from them? The large structures are being found, and forms of graphene are possible. So this is an unvaccinated person who had COVID last year and who's had chronic fatigue, brain fog, all kinds of other symptoms, is just feeling unwell. This is a huge structure. If you see that these are red blood cells, this is exactly what we're seeing in the vials. It's a folded up carbon tube. This is most likely, it can be from shedding. And this is a real concern. This is somebody else who has an elevated D-dimer, meaning their blood is clotting. If it is graphene, the pH of graphene is 1.3. It's an extremely acidic molecule that leads to this type of rouleau formation where the red blood cells no longer can carry oxygen. And this looks just like what Shimon showed in terms of these magnetic bead-like structures. What is this doing in a healthy person, middle-aged, who has no symptoms? My concern is a lot of these people are asymptomatic. Most of the people that I'm doing my blood tests on now, not normal. You can see how that around it. There might be some electromagnetic phenomena that is affecting these people. Here again, you can see these huge structures. If you look at a red blood cell, this is hundreds of times larger. With this rouleau formation, it is affecting blood circulation. And these fibers back here, this is fibrin. This is causing blood clotting, okay? And so right here, you've seen in Shimon's images exactly these kinds of strange things. So some of our colleagues are saying that these are, again, crystals, and that they're thinking that this is fibrin. I don't think so. And I've talked to scientists who've done live blood analysis for 30 years. They say they have never, ever seen something like that in such a massive scale in people. Look at how large this is. These are all unvaccinated people. And this is a shedding phenomenon. This is environmental poisoning. It's having effect. I've been a physician for over 22 years. I've never seen this amount of brain fog and dementia-like symptoms in 30-year-old people who have presumed COVID. Here, this is what's in their blood. These are huge carbon structures, and look at this blood. It's just clumping together. Unvaccinated people.
Anna, how do you know this is caused by shedding or by environmental toxins?
We don't know where it's coming from. So our colleague Matt Taylor, and I've done a video with him, he found these structures in rainwater because of spraying chemtrails. We have people who have analyzed the rainwater. It's fully graphene carbon structures. We have it in food supplies. We have people who found it in even mineral, carbonated mineral water. We know that the mRNA injections are being given to the animals, so it might be in the food supply. But there are a lot of people who are saying that they have symptoms when they're around vaccinated people. Like I said, you know, women who are just hemorrhaging and even postmenopausally, and it doesn't stop, these extreme fatigue-like issues. And I think that a lot of people are complaining about symptoms that are around vaccinated people. Here's just another image. This is this rouleau formation, and you can see the amount of fibrin back here in somebody who has these kinds of graphene-like findings. So I think that I just want to very briefly say there are possibilities, for example, with EDTA that can dissolve hydrogel, it can take out graphene, it does take out metals. I use it IV. There are other modalities, for example, through the skin. Humic acid has been found to dissolve graphene. Nitric oxide is very important because the microbiome can help with detoxification. Vitamin C is a chelator of metals. NAC, glutathione, dimethylglycine. Peroxidases have been shown to dissolve these things. For example, that's in horseradish. Eat organic, have clean water, use ionic foot baths and sauna. And the reason why I'm saying this is while people are spending a lot of time discussing this, they're going to attack us, they're going to, you know, discredit us. There are people that have ticking time bombs in their body. And what I'm saying is, in addition to everything else that they're doing with these back injury protocols, also address these metals, also address the graphene, start getting microscopes and just saving people's lives.
That makes sense. We still don't know what exactly we know what we're talking about. We're talking about structures that are probably devices, and we know this stuff doesn't belong in the vials, and it certainly doesn't belong in the human body. We don't know what it causes, apart from the fact that it probably causes thrombotic reactions, blood clotting. But we need help. We need more. We need to investigate. We need to look into this much deeper. But I think this is an excellent first step to get this out to the broader public, to as many people as possible, so that hopefully people will join us and do their own research, experts who might be helpful to us. And I didn't know, Anna, that this stuff was even found in, that these devices were found in animals and in water and in food, apparently. Are you sure about that?
It's in the patents, by the way. They state. I can show you right now if you want. We can look at where I can email it after. Yeah.
It's extremely concerning.
It can be put in clothing too. It can be put in anything. These are nano. Uh-huh. They're AI nano biological nanoparticles. They have ionic charges and they can penetrate surfaces and infect people. I mean, it's in the patents. They explain what they're doing. Uh-huh. They even specifically mention that they're going to put it in combat wear, in quote, military equipment. They say they will coat workout like gyms down with it too. So.
People are never going to understand this unless you understand that we are right now in World War III, and that's not a conspiracy, and that humanity has been attacked, and that we need to really wake up from this reality. Oh, it's just about science, and maybe we need to publish the next paper. Well, the entire medical literature, 70% of that is fraud according to their own editors. And I just think right now it's about, we need to save lives by getting the information out. I agree with you, Reiner. If people don't want to work with us or dismiss us, I don't even care. I don't want to spend a minute on them. It's like, let me get to the people that can hear me and that maybe have vaccine remorse and say, hey, try these things to maybe save your life. Get away from your cell phone. Get away from Wi-Fi. Because if there's a possibility that this is related, until people figure it out, just be safe so that we don't have more died suddenly 20-year-olds.
Yeah. I don't know if you're in touch with the Truth for Health Foundation. I think Sasha and Hedley and me have worked with Dr. Lieve Liet. And she's brilliant. She's working with anyone who's got insight into recovery, vaccine recovery. So if you're in touch, great. If not, you'd be welcomed with open arms. She has a platform and developing protocols. And because it's not subject to rigorous, placebo-controlled trials, it has to be done by, people with good heart, good heads, and a strong rationale. So that sounded like where your list came from. So would you like an introduction, or do you already know her?
I'd love to. Thank you.
Great. Please. Yeah, I will do that.
And this is our most important task. To connect with everyone who can help. And that's what we're doing.
If I could just touch on the device thing, it's just like we need protocols for dismantling bombs, biological, mechanical bombs that are planted inside of people. And we need to heal people with this.
We first need to find out what this is. What we do know now is this doesn't belong in the vials, it doesn't belong in the human body, and it looks like we're dealing with devices. It doesn't just look it, as you showed us, Karen, these things are devices. Mm-hmm. If this changes everything, and I believe it does in a court of law, that would be extremely helpful. But what I do think is that if people see this, both the unvaccinated and the vaccinated, it's going to change their minds. It's going to at least make them ask questions. And if that is a good first step, then I'm happy with that. David.
I just wanted to make the point that people who need to be aware of that potential. And it's not the general population, it's not people that are vaccine injured, but it's the people that are looking at what this weapon does and what the problem may be. Because this could potentially be parts of that spectrum. There's a subset of people who need to be aware of it, that may not be aware of it.
Those are the people who we're trying to reach. We're trying to reach as many people as possible, but that that target group is probably the most important one, the one that you just mentioned. Because one thing is certain, as far as I'm concerned, and just like Mike, up until 2.5 years ago, if I had heard any of this, as I keep saying, I would have told them, take your pills, go see a doctor, you'll be fine. But in the meantime, I'm absolutely convinced that this is about life and death. It has never, ever been about health. Everything has been stood on its head. This is about life and death. And that is the most important message that we need to get out. And if once you understand this, and all of a sudden the things that we've seen today appear in a completely different light, because they may be used for killing us, as these devices and these so-called vaccines have done already. And even if you look at Steve Kirsch's estimate, I think is what you might want to call it, based on the VAERS data, 1.6 million people in the U.S. alone died after getting these shots, after getting these devices maybe injected into their bodies. We'll see.
I think the thing is, everything's been a lie. And if you read one of my Substacks, these are actually considered neuroweapons, biological neuroweapons. And for James Giordano, who works with two congresses on neuroweapons and weapons of mass destruction, he even says it would be illegal for us to use this on the American population or human population unless we did it under a medical experimentation with a private entity where transparency wouldn't be needed. This is on James Giordano's website. It's in one of my Substacks. So this is truly a war against humanity, where they said, look, if we were to do this, it's completely illegal and we'd be charged with crimes against humanity. But if people agreed to it under experimentation, and we didn't have to be transparent because of our partners, because of intellectual property, then we're not doing anything illegal. This is literally on his website.
Yeah. Interesting, Karen. I read yesterday, I think it was a Substack article, which I can find. You may know this story already. It turns out that the White House worked with a bunch of different branches of federal government, and to my great surprise, because I've not thought about it, the group that was in charge of strategy and operations was not CDC or FDA or anything like that, but FEMA.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that until yesterday, and I didn't sleep very well, because it was this FEMA have got nothing to do with public health, as you know, and yet there it is. There are memos, names, organizations, dates from the Trump White House. I'm not blaming him. It's just basically they'd spent 20 years rehearsing pandemic preparedness plans through HHS, CDC, that sort of thing, FDA, and then in February, I think it was, or March, just literally, it seemed arbitrary and capricious. The entire responsibility was moved to an branch of federal administration that has no competence or experience in dealing with it, and the other groups were cut out. So I only learned this yesterday, and I wonder, it probably means that the military has always run it, and that all of the rules we saw applied, are probably in parentheses and all suspended.
So, yes, absolutely.
It's I read it and I thought, they probably did it like this because no one with competence would be inside the administration and be able to say, you're doing it wrong. It's like the FEMA people wouldn't know what they should do. HHS was not technically involved and there's nothing to say about it. The regulators are probably told, because of the way this is coming at you, you just have to say, yes, you're required to. So, it gets worse and worse, but I'll send that paper out, that Substack article, and please judge for yourselves, folks. Is that what's happening? And if so, what the hell was behind it? It could affect what we do.
And your suspicion, Mike, is confirmed by the fact that if you look at the exercises, the first one was Operation Dark Winter. That was a military exercise.
Yeah.
And if you look at the defense that Pfizer gave in the Brooke Jackson trial, they said, oh, we didn't have to adhere to any rules because we were under a special, I forget the name, under a special contractual obligation with the military, with the DOD. The only thing we needed to do is supply them with, I don't know, 50 million prototypes or something. So it is definitely the military. It is what some people call the deep state. It's not all of the military, but the deep state that we're really looking at. We know that. But
if Pfizer is considered a covered person in that contract, and this is why the FDA approval is so important, in that same contract, I've read everything. In that same contract, I even have this highlighted. the DOD specifically says Pfizer and BioNTech are working with the FDA for FDA approval. Yeah. That is a separate procedure and is not under the DOD supervision. That's why the approval is so important. The shield is broken.
Yeah.
In their filings with GeoVax, the holding company for all the patents, they weren't supposed to even submit for FDA approval until June of 2025. They got a lot of pressure, Fauci freaked out and pushed for the FDA approval, and he broke the shield. And then they had to make sure that the people that were trying to win the battle for humanity were convinced that it never was broken.
Yes, I understand that. Friends, we have to come to a close unless there's some important additional remark that needs to be made, but I think we got the point across. We are dealing with really strange structures that probably are devices, and we're dealing with the military. We're dealing with something that is definitely dangerous for human beings. Shouldn't be in the human body. So, is there anything else that we need to add to this? This is a first step. I think we're going to have to do this again.
Finally, Mike, thank you so much for even allowing us to present this. Again, you know, this is so controversial. Many people don't even want to hear about it, don't want to listen. Thank you so much for allowing us on this platform. And thanks so much to Karen Kingston for her brilliant work. I think it's so important to at least allow a dialogue. Yeah. Then you can see for yourself. Yeah. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Everything needs to come out, because if it doesn't, we won't have the full picture. We need the full picture in order to make the right choices. And I thank you, all of you. I thank all of you, Anna, Shimon, Karen, David, for staying up so late. And of course, Mike. I'm very grateful for you helping me. And this is the first time we've ever done this, but it's probably not the last time. So thank you very, very much.
Yeah, thank you. I add my salute of gratitude and thanks to all of you, working away individually and with others to uncover this monstrous crime and hopefully be able to throw handfuls of greasy ball bearings under the feet of perpetrators. I want to live to see that.
Yes, we will. So thank you very much, and have a great weekend.
Cheerio.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers. Good sending you back. Thank you.
Okay. Excellent. Take care. This was another session of the International Crimes Investigative Committee, and this time we're really talking about crimes. There's no other way but to call these things crimes. If the injectables, as Shimon calls them, the devices that are being injected into the human body, if this is what's happening, then we're definitely not talking about vaccines. We're talking about the human body being misused for a purpose that it's probably too horrific to even think about it, but it is important for us to know that this is going on, and it is important for the people out there, especially those who are thinking about getting the so-called vaccines and those who've gotten them already, to understand that this is something very, very dangerous, and this is a crime against humanity. Thank you very much.